Dab returns to WPFW beginning Monday, July 29th, 2 a.m. till 5 a.m. with Music Memories, the best of old school from the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Yes, the return of Alvin Nedab on 89.3 WPFW FM, Monday, July 29th, 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
I'm Kamaya.
I'm Amira.
I'm Kaya.
I'm Kamaya.
And you're listening to WPFW Washington.
Another man done gone. Another man done gone from the county. From another man done gone.
Huh? I don't know. What? I'm just going to walk the street.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, no.
The jury of your peers having found you guilty, 10 years.
What? Come on.
I was in jail too, man. It's cold-blooded in the jail. You go down there looking for justice. That's what you find. Just us.
Welcome to another edition of Crossroads Today. Now here's your host, Roach Brown.
Good morning, and welcome to Crossroads. We come to you every Tuesday at the same time on WPFW 89.3 FM, your station for jazz and justice. WPFW is heard around the world. And for all those folks who've been sending emails and texts from around the globe, man, thank you. I had no idea that our show has developed into a global program, and we've been on air for 16 years bringing you information and topics relating to the criminal justice system. And we got an interesting show today, and I like this show. In fact, I like the guy who we got on to be our guest this morning. He looked like he's a teenager, but boy, he gonna blow your mind. But before we get to him, we'd like to open up with what we call the grapevine, information that you can use. The grapevine. Hey. After Biden's exit, Zoom, led by black women, mobilized 44,000 for Harris. The call, which organizers say raised more than $1.5 million in 3 hours, got women feeling energized and galvanized to support the vice president's surprise bid for president. One woman was putting her toddler to bed in Baltimore when her phone pinged. Another in Washington saw it while Zoom scrolling. A third sat on the deck of a Connecticut home talking about chores with her husband when the WhatsApp message came. They were all hearing about the same thing, a Sunday night Zoom call organized to support the presidential bid for Vice President Harris, who could be the first black woman elected president after Biden announced the end of his candidacy earlier that day. And I had dog hopes, folks. I didn't see no way of no hope on horizon when Biden said he's going to step down. Man, I thought I was in the doom. We had no hope. But when he picked Kamala Harris, for some reason, the word went out in our community, and I hadn't seen this kind of response in my entire life. They were hearing about the same thing, a Sunday night Zoom call organized to support Vice President Harris. More than 44,000 people logged onto a Zoom call to support Harris and raised more than $1.5 million for her campaign in 3 hours, according to Win for Black Women. The program, how did I get this? The program was so successful in raising the money for Kamala Harris, Monday night, more than 22,000 black men responded because they heard what the black women had raised, $1.5 million in 2-3 hours. The brothers got together, and last night I zoomed in, and man, it blew me away. Guys were calling in from all over the country. It was 22,000, and they kept coming in, making pledges and donations to support Kamala Harris's campaign bid. And I'm telling you, folks, this kind of unification and organization and coming togetherness is what we need. More more than 21,000 men registered for the Win with Black Men. It was organized by the journalist Roland Martin. And those who couldn't get in watched on YouTube and Facebook as a list of prominent Black male politicians, community leaders, organizers, mayors, congressmen, senators, street folk, drug addicts, returning citizens, welfare mothers. Everybody was tuning in to this program last night. And man, I'm telling you, the meeting of men followed a Sunday night Zoom meeting organized by the political advocacy group Win with Black Women that drew 44,000 on Sunday night. Within the first 20 minutes of Monday's call, Roland Martin said the men had already raised 130,000 in 20 minutes. Within a half hour, that number had raised to 500,000. And Martin said the money would go to the Harris campaign as well as to grassroots organizations run by Black men in battleground states. When we mobilize, we win. We move mountains, said Maryland Governor Wes Moore, who also took the mic and spoke. Man, it was congressmen, senators, governors, everybody. I've never in my entire life, and I ain't but 35 years old, plus tax. You know, you got to put some tax on top of that. And I'm telling you, this is what we need, folk, to make our issues more more prevalent. And at the same time, I never seen this kind of support except for the Million Man March that happened in October 95. We had a million men walk to come to Washington, D.C., and it was no arrests, no fights, no shootings, no guns, no nothing. A million of us got together, and we all got together under the banner of Honest Minister Louis Farrakhan. Man, this is the beginning of a movement. This movement, we can get Kamala in there. So, folks, please, I got one thing to say, that this meeting Sunday night and Monday night with the men and women gave us hope, and the hope is spreading. But we need to reach down to those folks who don't have computers, who don't have telephones. 45% of our population are living at the poverty level or below the poverty level. So we need to reach them and give them some of this same hope. Because the folks who were on had access to computers and et cetera. But for those folk who are Black who don't have access to computers or iPhones or whatever, we got to find a way to expand this hope to those who are really hopeless. And I'm thinking that we are on a road to something big and powerful. And folk, let's keep it together. Also, Ohio is among 34 states that criminalize people living with HIV. Who gets prosecuted? Cayuga County prosecutes the most people under laws with heightened penalties. There are no national reporting requirements that track arrests or prosecutions under state laws that criminalize people living with HIV. Until recently, it wasn't clear how frequently people were arrested or prosecuted under six Ohio laws that criminalize certain acts, including sex, or substantially increase the penalties. Some of the laws also apply to people with hepatitis or tuberculosis. And folks, this has to stop. It's a type of felonious assault to have sexual contact with another person, telling them if you had HIV, hepatitis, or tuberculosis, this crime can be prosecuted regardless of whether the virus was transmitted or protected, such as condoms were used. It doesn't matter if the person had an undetectable level of virus in their blood and was unable to transmit HIV. It is also illegal to harass a person with a bodily substance, including blood, saliva, feces, urine, or semen. The penalties increase for a person with HIV. Soliciting sex, selling sex, or loitering in the area with the intent to sell sex are all illegal and have increased penalties for people living with HIV. Selling or donating blood or plasma if you have HIV is also against the law. And I just want to say that this is something that's just, I should tell people that I have HIV. And most Black people living in the Black community are affected by HIV, and I call it hood infected virus, a virus that infects all the folk who are poor, unemployed, disabled, living below the poverty line. We are all infected with the HIV virus. It stands for hood infected virus. And that's been what we call the grapevine. And folk, I want to say that thank you for tuning in to Crossroads at the Grapevine. Now we get to our topic. From prison to PhD medical researcher, brings graduate education to the recently released. And our guest this morning is Dr. Stanley Andreese, Assistant Professor, Howard University College of Medicine. Good morning, Doc. How are you? Dr. Andreese, you there? He was there a minute ago. I guess he's trying to log back in, so I'll just keep right on going. What we'll do is go down to, and while we're waiting on Dr. Stanley Andreese to join us, I just want to say again, last night, Monday night, over 22,000 men tune in on Zoom to give their support and make donations to Kamala Harris and her bid for being elected president of the United States.
And vote.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I was one of the 45,000 Black women who was
Tell
on that
about
call
your...
the day before, Sunday night.
Well, start off with what you got going to teach you on Sunday night. How did it go?
Woo! Oh, my goodness gracious. You know, when you think about the organization that organizing and fundraising that just happened in just one day. Okay, you talked about Million Man March. Million Man March was organized over the course of a year, and it was absolutely phenomenal.
Yes.
But this organization that happened in just one day,
yeah.
Just think what we as a people can do when we unite. I mean, you know, and then the brothers came on the next day. I mean, it was absolutely powerful. I'll tell you one thing. I know, in fact, it infused enthusiasm of just, you know, into what otherwise was a, I'm not even going to say, but it was great to see all the sisters on the call unified on this mm-hmm. issue.
Yeah.
And Nikichi, it wasn't even a day that I was on a call with a Wives Club. It came through like 4:00. And that call was at 7:00.
It was a couple of hours.
We were not playing.
Right. And the thing is, originally it was like a capacity for 1,000. That quickly had to be a change. And if it wasn't for some high level Zoom executive, that's how the call was able to get to, I think it ended up being 45,000 Black women.
Yeah.
Yes, you know, it was mind blowing, Nikichi. I mean, this is, the notification on this call for Sunday and Monday. I got on a call for Sunday. Yeah. I didn't know it's for all women. I was just sitting there just listening. And I'm not even a woman, but I enjoyed it. You know what I mean? And I heard them sisters calling from all over the country. Giving their testimonies and et cetera and supporting this. If this had enough promotion weeks or a week or months in advance, it's no telling how big that response would have been. This was only a few hours notification, and it was able to mobilize this. And I guess also they were feeling the same thing when Biden made his announcement that he wasn't going to run. It was like giving the election to Trump. Who else do we have on the horizon that can beat Trump? I had no idea who we had then. I said, we can give the election away. But when he threw it to Kamala Harris, boy, my hat jumped off my head, and I said, oh, my goodness, we got a shot. We got a shot, and it's up to us to make this thing a reality.
So one of the things that needs to happen is, with the issues that we deal with on Crossroads, we need to make sure that this same type of mobilization happens for these issues for our incarcerated and formerly incarcerated population. I mean, I know a lot of people talk about Kamala Harris and was a prosecutor, et cetera, ABC 123. Okay, well, now is the time for us to come together and unite and make demands that we deal with this issue of the criminal punishment system and stop having to have such a disproportionate impact on Black people and people of color. Now is the time. We've seen what we can do as a people. We need to do it on these issues as well.
Yes.
You know, Nikichi, this thing is so powerful that I still feel elated and empowered that I see something on the horizon, because it looked very dark and bleak when Biden resigned or said that he's going to turn over or step down and not run for re-election. And he threw the gavel to Kamala. Man, I'm telling you, I feel energized. The call last night, Nikichi, it brought tears in my eyes when Bakari Sellers got to talking about his wife and daughter, about 15 to 20 seconds. It seemed like it opened up the floodgates. I went to the side of the screen, and I saw more names coming down. There go my man. He's back with us. Good. So we're gonna break away from Nikichi and get to our guest, Dr. Stanley
All right, Priest,
Assistant Professor, Howard University College of Medicine. And thank you, Dr. Andreas. You want to tell our listeners a little bit about your history, Doc, please?
Yes, most certainly. Thank you for having me. Sorry for the technical difficulties. I'm actually here at the National Institutes of Health, about to give a keynote speak here, and the internet connections. I was trying to find a good place with connections, so my apologies for popping off there for a second. It is a great pleasure. I've been enjoying the conversation. I've been hearing the whole thing, although you were unable to see me. So I've been enjoying the conversation. I couldn't agree more. It's such an amazing time that we're in terms of what just recently took place over the past couple of days. And I'm really looking forward to, you know, what is coming ahead and how we really work to try to, you know, secure a victory that's going to, you know, help our communities strive and do better. So really looking forward to that, and I appreciate the conversation. So thank you, Roach, for this invitation. I think it's a year in the making. We've been trying to make this happen. Internet has tried, you know, must be some Microsoft stuff that even though I'm here, they're still trying to make it not happen. But such a pleasure to be here. So a little bit about myself. My name is Stan Andreas. Roach and I crossed paths some time ago doing the work. And, you know, he was interested to share with his community and his audience, you know, my experiences and my work. And, you know, we were like, let's make it happen. So a little bit about myself, just, you know, as many of your listeners might know about you as well. So I am a formerly incarcerated person with 3 felony convictions. I was sentenced to 10 years in prison as a prior and persistent career criminal. I got hit with the 3 strikes law of the state of Missouri. You know, I had 3 separate felony convictions. So with that particular type of conviction history, the prosecutor was pushing for 20 years to life in prison because she felt that I had no hope for changing the decisions that I had been making up until that time in my early 20s. I got hit with the 10, as I just mentioned. Fast forward some time, I did my time, and I'm now Dr. Stan Andreas, an endocrine scientist and assistant professor at
Harvard. Hey, man, I'm proud of you, man.
Yes, yes.
You are who? Give us that title again.
Yes, yes. Having the history that I have and being at Howard University, I know you have a history with Howard as well. It's a place. It's a special place for Black individuals and people of color, and what it has meant to this country and really to our world in terms of elevating the Black experience and elevating the need for our voices in all conversations, including the future president of our country, Kamala Harris.
You said it right, our future president. I drink to that. Folks, we're sitting there on Zoom talking to Dr. Stanley Andreas, and he reminded me of Teon Martin White from Ward 8, the city councilman. He looked like he's a teenager, but he's a little older. Dr. Andreas looked like you could be Teon's brother. Y'all look just similar. You don't look your age, man. And it's hard to imagine you a doctor, and you look like a jitterbug, man. You know what I mean? You look like a youngster.
Oh, yeah. I get it all the time.
You get it all the time. Well, I get the reverse of that. They say that I look like I'm 100 years old.
Man, you're doing some amazing stuff. So I think whatever you are drinking and eating and the way you live it, we all want to know. Because, I mean, you are just, you've been such a force in this movement for, you know, such a long time. Right.
Yeah, we wanted, you know, it's very seldom. There was we talked the other day, and we talked about a friend of ours who's no longer with us, named Eddie Ellis, who died in 2014. Eddie was a Black Panther, and he was sentenced to life, and he did 23 years in New York State. And he had a program similar to what you're doing, Stan. He was getting inmates inside of the prison, not to get the PhD, the GED, he had a PhD program in upstate New York, and he got one, come out and got him, was doing this thing. And you were doing the same kind of thing because the GED is limited. You get there and you get a job as a janitor with a GED. You need to make enough funds to take care of your family. So, Dr. Stanley Andrus, man, I take my hat off. What is this program? You've been working inside a prison, a Maryland State prison system, to get men to go to take this course, this STEM program. What is it?
Yeah. Yeah, I just want to give, thanks and a rest in paradise to the brother Eddie Ellis, is a giant in our field. We quote his, words and his work so much in what we do in terms of the language that we use around folks who've been impacted. So just want to, state that. Our program is called From Prison Cells to PhD. It actually is my book that was recently released. That was the number one release in educator biographies on Amazon. Shares the same name, From Prison Cells to PhD. It is never too late to do good. And the book and the program, which, the program has been, we've now been in existence as a nonprofit in the state of Maryland for 7 years. And the goal of both the book and the nonprofit is really to help people. Our mission statement is to help people excel beyond what life circumstances and society have set to be the norm. So just as you were just explaining with, what a GED does for you, we've come to the understanding, being a directly impacted person, being sitting in the prison cell, being locked in a cage, knowing what it feels like for too long, society and the individuals who've experienced prison have this idea of what a person who's been to prison can do. And for the most part, it's, get out of prison, stop committing crime, and put on some type of construction hat or do some type of manual labor. And if you've ever, for the folks who've been to prison and sat in the cell, there's brilliance. There's so much talent being wasted. And we just wanted to tap into that. So, the program is really this idea of helping tap into that talent that we know exists. Talent is distributed evenly. So the great brilliance, scientists, engineers that we have in our, our outside society, we have that on the inside too. The difference is the access to opportunity. So there's a lack of access and opportunity, and our program seeks to provide that. We've connected with several thousand people across the country. We work inside Maryland prisons, and we work inside Missouri prisons. We work inside DC jail, but we connect with people in 34 different states. We've connected with thousands of people across the country, and we've helped them move into, obtaining meaningful employment and higher education. So we have a lot of people we've helped move into PhDs, but we've helped people move into starting their own construction company. Instead of putting on the construction hat, they're starting their company, and we've helped them get, the certifications to do that. So we just really want to help people tap into their innate talent.
I want to thank you, man, because this is amazing. My wife and I, we respect and admire anybody who get knocked down, stepped on, rolled over, and mashed in. And you stand back up, being like as someone that's set up for a comeback, man. And you came back, and you came back in style. And when you go to prison, sometimes your greatest disappointment is a blessing in disguise. And I want to know, what started you? What inspired you and motivated you? You inside doing 10 years, and you decided to be, a doctor? How did you get into this field? You got a PhD in the medical field. And you in prison doing 10 years. What did you do to start the ball rolling?
Yeah, and if I could share an experience of when I was getting sentenced. So as I mentioned, the prosecutor was pushing for 20 to life. She was pushing, and she was pushing for that because she felt that I was this dangerous threat to society. And, so I had a prosecutor saying all these things, and I had my attorney, asking for this mitigated sentence. And my time was 10 to life. She was pushing for the longest, you know, max, right? And I got hit with the minimum. I got hit with 10. And as I got the sentence, it was almost this out-of-body experience.
Yes.
Where when I finally came to and realized what was happening, I'm the youngest of five. My family were Haitian immigrants. And, you know, my family was in the courtroom. My mom was in the courtroom. And I asked the judge, as I just got sentenced to 10 years, if I could go hug my mother, who at this point in time, she's losing her youngest son as being Haitian immigrants, although we were from the Ferguson, Missouri area, which is a predominantly Black community, we still felt like outsiders because we were Haitian immigrants. Yeah. So she, you know, she's losing her youngest son, our family was all we got. She's bawling in tears. I asked the judge if she could, you know, if I could go give my mother a hug, and the judge denied me the opportunity.
Yes.
To go give my mother a hug. And I share that because it was this smack in the face that for some reason I had been in and out of courtrooms before that time. I had been incarcerated already before that time. But I thought that there was justice in the justice system, but it you know, it smacked me dead in the face that there's justice for some and injustice for others.
Justice for others.
You know, I thought there was respect and civility, but there's respect and civility for some, and dehumanization for others. And so, you know, I went into prison at, you know, feeling completely dehumanized and devalued. And so much of my early incarceration, I was just figuring out how I was going to become a better criminal. So, you know, I was just thinking about how I could continue doing what I was doing, because that's what society was telling me, that they're all that was it for me. You know, so the change that you ask about came in, you know, this mentor stepped into my life and saw me using my skills and talents differently. He started investing in my potential. About the first 2 years of my incarceration, I ended up losing my father to his battle with type 2 diabetes. And this mentor provided me my first, you know, scientific article. You know, I read my first scientific article on diabetes provided from this mentor. And, you know, to any listeners or, you know, that are familiar with science. So, you know, it would literally take me months to get through these articles because I didn't have Google or WebMD or ChatGPT. So it would take me a long time to get through it. And it sounds like not very pleasant, but for me, it was the greatest thing that could ever happen. Although my body was physically locked in a prison cell,
yes,
my mind was freely roaming around the human cell. And in that way, I was actually freed. And so, you know, that was, you know, this mentor stepping into my life and me finding endocrinology and starting to study it before I even, you know, went into my formal training, was what freed me from thinking that I was going to be in this revolving door of incarceration. And that was the change that was, you know, the beginning of this. Mm.
You say the name of what kind of scientist you are again?
So endocrinology is the study of hormones. I mean, I focus and specialize in diabetes and type 2 diabetes, you know, but I am, you know all endocrinology and the different challenges that present from, you know, disorders of the endocrine system.
Did you get any pushback from the other guys inside when he saw you studying and reading your books and you trying to get your act together? What kind of pushback did you get?
Yeah, and actually, you know, the co-founder of our organization, you know, the two other co-founders, we were all locked up together. And I can recall when I was going through this change, because, you know, literally, you know, it would have been like days or weeks, maybe, I guess maybe like weeks before, I was having the same conversation with our co-founder about how I was going to get out and make even more money than I was making selling drugs before. And so, you know, when I finally came to him and I was telling him, like, you know, we're walking around the track, it's a maximum security prison. And I hit him with, you know, man, you know what? I think I'm going to be a doctor when I get out. And he just looks at me like, what are you talking about? You're going to be like, you know where we at? We're in a maximum security prison. Nobody's got outdates. There's, you know, a whole bunch of folks here that will never have outdates. They got life without parole. And you're talking about getting out and being a doctor. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah,
and, you know, so he would just laugh it off. We'd like, let's go play basketball. But time went on and it was still this joke until it started happening when I, you know, I ended up getting out before he did. And, you know, he saw me taking these steps with the help of that mentor you know, to continue my education. And, you know, it actually, it eventually started before I was released. When I finally, you know, sometime later did get an outdate from parole, I started working to continue my education with the help of this mentor. And it, you know, it took months and months to put together these applications for various different challenges that you face for being incarcerated. Immediately after pressing the submit button, just rejection after rejection after rejection applied to, except for St. Louis University, where this mentor was on the admissions, got my MBA and PhD simultaneously and moved on eventually then moved on to Howard. I've been a visiting faculty at Georgetown University. I took my talents across seas to a place called Imperial College London, which is an Ivy League caliber school in the UK. I just completely did not live up to those expectations that prosecutor had set on this young Black boy, from Ferguson. I've created the program that I've only talked a little bit about, really as a pathway, you know, having made it to where I am now. It would just, you know, I wouldn't be able to sleep at night if I just sat there and was this Howard University faculty, you know, I got two kids, I got to love, you know, my beautiful wife and nice, my family is, you know, my life is good, right? Yeah. And I could just do that, but I wouldn't be able to sleep at night if I wasn't pulling others and showing others this pathway. We've basically created a blueprint is what the organization is. It's a blueprint on how to put your life back together and the pieces that you need, which is support, which is community, which is mentorship, which is coaching.
You know, we enjoy bringing stories like this because I was in prison serving life. And we just had an event last week, man, that had me crying. I got a presidential commendation from President Ford. And the young lady who was instrumental in getting that for me was the press secretary, was appointed as the press secretary to the first lady. Her and I worked together at the TV station while I was on the pass. They let me out of prison to work at the television station. And I worked as a producer with her. And that was 45 years ago. Would you believe she called me 2 weeks ago? And she helped me get back. So for 45 years, I never saw her or heard from her. She called me out of the blue. We had lunch the other day at Ben's Chili Bowl. My wife, Miss Virginia Ali, and the lady Sheila Weidenfeld, who was Betty Ford's press secretary. And we told her, thank her for saving my life, because she took my case straight to the president of the United States, and I was able to get out. And I haven't told her thank you in 45 years. Our lives
that took different paths. That is incredible.
And she was reading the Washington Post, mm-hmm. the food section, the section she doesn't normally read. And she saw an article on Ben's Chili Bowl. And in the article, it mentioned that my wife and I do this radio show once a month from live from the Chili Bowl. She felt like to fill out the seats. I know Roach. And she called some people and they called me. We got to tell, and we went to meet. We met with her last Thursday. And
that is incredible.
I had tears in my eyes. It's the first time in 45 years to tell somebody that thank you for saving my life and believing in me. And the irony of it is, we were meeting at the Chili Bowl. She read an article about the Chili Bowl. We brought us back together. And I've been going to the Chili Bowl for 65 years. Because I'm telling my age. I don't mean to do that. But it's okay. So we had an experience. It's like your mentor. When you meet somebody who believes in you, and I like to have a question. That prosecutor who said all them negative things that you should get maximum time inside of prison, you are this, you bad, and whatever. Do she know, or have you communicated with her to let her know, hey, lady, you were wrong when I came in front. Look where I'm at now. Have you communicated with the prosecutor?
Yeah. So I've actually invited her to my dissertation, to my graduation, to my wedding. I informed her of my appointment at Howard University. I informed her.
Yes.
Copy. And I know she, it was, I know she got it. I sent it to, I got confirmation that she got it. She's never responded to me.
Shameful, because it's such a serious. She ought to feel bad about it because it's such a sad situation of the double standard. Like you say, it's unfortunate. I mean, we know too many people whose mothers and fathers died while they were in prison. They weren't able to see them. And it's like you said, it's just inhumane treating people living in a cage. It's got to change. It's got to stop.
You know, you said one of these articles said something at Howard University. You're working at Howard, and Howard was started to assist and help those people coming out of slavery. And your program is helping people come out of prison. And Howard has the same reputation. We've been working with Howard University, Doc, since 1971 with the School of Social Work, the law school, whatever. So we've been involved with Howard. And I understand that you received, you were named co-recipient of a major National Science Foundation grant to increase access to STEM education to promote pathways to STEM careers for the incarcerated. Can you tell us what that is a little bit?
Yes. So I just mentioned to you all that I'm at the National Institutes of Health. So I should probably also, I will also mention my NIH funding that I get too, because I don't know if I can speak the words of National Science Foundation in the hallways of NSF, or the hallways of NIH, but yes. I'll kind of speak to both of them because they serve similar purposes. So that, you know, familiar with the National Science Foundation and the NIH funders of science and medical research in our country. So the program that we have is the one that you're referring to from the National Science Foundation is one of their biggest like funding mechanisms. They have this like 10-year strategic plan, and it is one of the pillars of their strategic plan is to increase the scientific workforce diversity. So increase diversity within the science workforce. And so this grant is a grant from that initiative, and it's to broaden participation in STEM fields. Most of the grants were around $10 million over 5 years. And it's called an Includes grant. So our program is called STEM Ops. So STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. And the Ops is opportunities in prison. So we want to increase STEM opportunities in prison is what the project is all about. And we are the only Includes grant that is working with that population of people. And this is a partnership with Princeton University, Vanderbilt University Education Development Center, our organization, which we call P2P, and Operation Restoration. P2P and Operation Restoration are both, you know, P2P led by me. Operation Restoration is led by a Black formerly incarcerated woman. So we are the two kind of, they've appointed us as like kind of the heads of, they really wanted this effort to be led by directly impacted people, which is fantastic. Our partners are just amazing. And we've built this network of over 100 different organizations and universities across the country that are working to create STEM internships inside prison and outside prison, mentorship programs. We create curriculum, STEM curriculum. When you think about like a biology course, for instance, you have to dissect a frog in intro biology or dissect something, a pig, right? Mm-hmm. To dissect a pig, you need a scalpel. Like, how do you bring a scalpel inside a prison? Like, how do you deliver that curriculum when you have to use a knife? Or if you're in chemistry, you have to mix acid. Like, you can't bring acid. Yeah. So we've designed ways to do that. So there's ways to do that. We've created that curriculum. The NIH program that we have, I'm about to speak about it. Again, mentioned I'm at a keynote for one of NIH's centers called NIGMS. The grant that we have from them is a grant called Bridges to Baccalaureate. So it is a bridge where this Bridges to Baccalaureate program has been running for, I think, 3 or 4 decades through NIH. And it is to help Black and brown individuals move into community colleges and then transfer to 4-year colleges. It's supposed to be a bridge from a 2-year community college to a 4-year college. So this is a partnership between P2P, Baltimore City Community College, and Howard. So we actually, you know, it's the first, although this program has been going on for over 40 years at NIH, it's their very first one that is working with currently incarcerated people. So through P2P, we start working with them while they're still in prison in Maryland. We help them transfer and get into BCCC. They then get a full scholarship and a livable wage stipend to go to BCCC. Then eventually they will transfer to Howard University,
beautiful,
the Mecca,
beautiful,
and get beautiful a bachelor's degree at Howard University.
Oh my God, WPFW FM, your station for Jazz and Justice, 89.3. We do have a caller, but I do want to share. This must be so exciting to our listening audience because my heart is fluttering. And I know there are people listening who say, wow, I can take advantage of this. So it's awesome.
We'll take our first caller. But before we take the caller, Stan, I want to ask you this. Former President Trump got a thing called 2025. He wanted to abolish the education department, the Department of Education, and also that would include the Pell Grants. And I'm thinking, was Pell Grants a part of this program that these men you're working with inside were able to go to college and the education was paid for under the Pell Grant? And how would
One, that would be terrible. I'm not familiar, actually. I have to look that up. But, you know, it would absolutely be terrible. You know, Pell, I was part of, you know, I didn't speak too much to the policy work that we do. Pell was gone for 25 years. You talked about Eddie Ellis. The work that he was doing was when Pell grants were around people inside, and he was getting them PhDs and all types of advanced degrees. That went away for 25 plus years, and it was just recently brought back. To hear that, That would be absolutely terrible for our
devastating.
Have the money from NIH, so they're actually able to save their Pell dollars because NIH is, you know, supporting their tuition.
Okay, you on the air, please call on name and
this is name? Rick calling long distance from Germany, man.
I knew that'd be you, Rick. I get ready to say Gesundheit, man. I knew you'd be the first one called. You out there in Stuttgart, or what part of Germany? I keep asking this now, keep forgetting. What part of Germany are you in, Rick?
15 minutes outside of Munich, Germany.
Okay, beautiful. And you don't miss a show, man. I appreciate you calling in from Germany.
Well, Roach, let me say to you, your panel, your lovely wife, Miss Nikichi, and your guest today, I am dying slowly after being poisoned in 2003 with intestinal parasites taken from my own body and fed back to me. I want to say to your listening audience, if you are in the prison system and you have any shot at education while you are in or when you get out, if they have not poisoned your flesh and made you an imbecile, a brain-damaged individual, then take advantage of any education you can get. I come from a military family and a family of doctors, so I know the accomplishment that this young man has made, and it is open to others. Take the opportunity while it is there, because the Republicans... The Republicans mean us no good, and if they get back in, it's pretty much done deal for us in the prison system. Thank you.
You know, I just want to say this, that a lot of men and women in institutions, Doc, are listening to our show all around the world, and we try to motivate and inspire, and when stories like yours and you come by, you had 10, you was in, and you studied the field, that you couldn't even get the equipment, you couldn't do the research, you couldn't do the experimentation, but you found a way. There's always a way. If you have the determination and the desire, you can do whatever. I didn't care what they said. I came out in 7 years. It didn't make no difference. I started writing poems and plays, and I never even seen a play, but I wrote them. You know what I mean? Because when you get the desire to go home, Jack, I'm coming out of there. And, you and your story is what we need for them men and women who are listening to what we're saying. Yeah. I don't care how dark it is, how lonely and frustrated. You are closer to being successful than you are to being out of it. Because when you're at the bottom, it ain't but one way to go. Ain't but one way to go. And that's straight up. And brother, you took it straight up and out. And I like people to take it up and out. And you're my kind of guy, man. You know, if you was a little older, you'd be my best friend. You know that? Because I don't hang with youngsters.
Well, doctor, I know folks would like to know more about your program. How do they reach out to you or to learn?
Yes, thank you for asking. Roach, I'm looking forward to us catching up again. This has been a year in the making, so I'm glad we were able to make this happen, and looking forward to our conversation coming soon as well. You can find us, you can find me, my social media handles are Dr. Dr. Andrisse, A-N-D-R-I-S-S-E. So Dr. Andrisse on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn. The organization is at Prison2Pro. You can follow our organization on all the platforms. And then you can reach out to us at info@prison2pro.org. I also encourage you to pick up a copy of the book, From Prison Cells to PhD. It's never too late to do good. Available on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, or wherever books are sold.
At prison2pro.org.
Prison T-O-P-R-O. So prison2pro.
Prison2pro.org.
All right. And for those folks who are listening, who might want to try what the good doctor's done, what advice, Doc, would you give to them people? I know when you left out of Missouri, you left a lot of friends there, man. You left a lot of people that you grew up with and knew. And they saw you leave out. Have you been in direction for the guys that you know that are still there?
Yeah. Since I've come home, but there are still some people that I was locked up with that organization goes inside Missouri Department of Corrections. The organization was co-founded by people that I was incarcerated with. We started it because we started helping, I helped the co-founder use education as this, transformative tool. And then we started helping a few other people that we were incarcerated with do the same. And that's what gave us, the light bulb to say, let's try to help hundreds and thousands of people. And so we started the organization. So we are still very much a strong presence in there. But what I would say to him, to that part of your question, so the subtitle of my book, It Is Never Too Late to Do Good, is what I would say
to him. Send me a copy of that book. Send us a copy of it, please.
I'll have a signed copy for you.
I'll see you in a couple of days.
That phrase, it's never too late to do good, was a phrase that my father used to tell me. My family, as I mentioned, were Haitian immigrants. The first language I learned was Creole. And so that's the language I spoke in my house. What he would actually tell me is a phrase called Il n'est jamais trop tard pour faire bien, which means it is never too late to do good. But it doesn't have that's the word translation. The real translation is it's never too late to reach your full potential. And it's never too late to do the right thing.
There you go.
But my father had this very powerful message for the criminal legal system. He was telling it to his son, but it was really this message that I delivered to the criminal legal system now through him, who, of course, he's passed away, but continues to be an inspiration for me. But his words of it's never too late to do the right thing.
Yes.
Is this idea that in the criminal legal system, we have people that get sentenced to life in prison, double life sentence, triple life sentence. Like, why would you sentence someone to two or three life sentences? Like, if you die and come back, I'm going to sentence you and put you back in a cage.
Right.
So there's this ridiculousness of how we sentence people because we don't believe in change.
Let me just type in real quick, because earlier when you were mentioning the sentence that you got 10 years and you were like thankful that you got 10 years, it's just absolutely ridiculous that 10 years is considered a godsend. I mean, we need to do something about these ridiculously lengthy sentences. Yeah. So I just
I couldn't agree more. And it speaks to this idea that society in the system doesn't believe in the power of change. So we wouldn't sentence people to those amounts of time if we didn't believe that they had it within them to change. And that's what the message that my father was delivering, is that it's never too late. for you to see the value that you can bring to yourself and to the world. And, you know, we need to start believing that as individuals, but then as a society, we need to start believing that it's possible for people to have done some, you know, very terrible things, but yes, they have the capability to bring value to themselves and others, given opportunity.
There you go. Right. What would you say? We got a few minutes left, Doc, to folk who are listening inside of an institution or out. What would you tell them in your closing remarks that they can deal with whatever they're dealing with in life? You dealt with something that a lot of people would just commit. I know guys committed suicide. They didn't have 10. They had 5. Everybody can't do time. It affects everybody differently. And you came out, you hold. And secondly, you from Haiti, and Haiti is undergoing a whole lot of turmoil and catastrophe in their country. And you came out of Haiti to go to prison. Man, you've been in the double. There's a thing called the basement is the lowest room in your house. But there's a room beneath the basement. And there's a room beneath that room. And you came from them rooms beneath the basement, the sub-basement, the maximum. And yet you're able to come back. So what would you say to people listening to you?
I mean, it's never too late to do good. It's not over for you. Believe in yourself. And that's the first person that will get you through. It's never too late to do good.
Beautiful.
I also would like to share before we get off the air that you can go to Ben's Chili Bowl on Facebook, and it's there. Roach thanking Sheila Wildenfeld after 45 years of her assisting him getting his commutation from President Ford. So check out Ben's Chili Bowl Facebook page.
Okay. Doc, you got any closing, Nikeisha, you got any closing remarks you want to give Nikeisha before we get out?
No, just to thank you so very much for your guests. And, you know, his situation is a situation that I just love that so many formerly incarcerated people are coming out and doing phenomenal things.
Yes.
They should not have been in for those long periods of time in the first place. Back to you.
Right. Yes.
That's right.
Okay.
Prison to Pro. Check out Dr. Stanley Andrews, Prison to Pro. You'll find him. Google all his social media.
So, how many other guys have you been able to get out who got their PhDs that have been working in your program? Okay, 2 minutes.
We're at the point that it's too many for me to think off the top of my head. It's dozens
that many?
Of folks that we've
that many. Dude, that
we got somebody that's working on their I always say he's going to be the first formerly incarcerated person to land on Mars. He's got NASA money. He's crazy. He's an astrophysicist.
Wow. And what you say you'd probably be the first returning citizen to land on Mars. Why you say that?
He's smart. Brilliant. Because he's brilliant. And he's got the motivation to, you know, change the world. He's done incredible. His name is Majid Muhammad. He's finishing his PhD in astrophysics. He got scholarships from all over MIT, Harvard, Princeton. He ended up going to UC Santa Barbara because they gave him more money. He's incredible.
Thank you, Doc, for joining us. We've been trying to get you because we last saw you last month down in New Orleans at the Black Ball.
Boston Rob. Yep. Sneaker Ball.
Boy, that was quite a thing there, man. It blew me away. Everywhere I go, I start crying. I must be old. I must be getting old. I cry too much, man.
It was an incredible. I cried too. The movie was incredible. Yeah.
Thank you,
Doc. Time too.
Dr. Stanley Andrews, Assistant Professor, Howard University College of Medicine. Our topic has been from prison to PhD. Former incarcerated Howard University medical researcher brings graduate education to the recent release. Thank you, Doc. We need you. Keep it up, man. It don't stop. And I'll see you in a few days. And Merry Christmas to you, Doc.
Merry Christmas. Bless him.
That's been what you say? Okay. Thank you for joining us and listening to PR the Donators Sunday night and Monday night for Kamala's campaign. We need you. Thank you. See you next week.
On Wednesday, July 24th at 11 a.m., people are gathering from around the country to surround the U.S. Capitol and demand the arrest of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu for war crimes in Gaza. In a new low for Congress, it is inviting Netanyahu, the subject of a warrant request at the International Criminal Court, to speak. This is at the same time that he is committing a genocide. Tens of thousands of Palestinians, overwhelmingly women and children, have been murdered, and schools, hospitals, houses of worship, and residential neighborhoods have been leveled by increased bombardment by Israel, which is also blocking food, water, and medicine in a siege of starvation and death. On July 24th at 11 a.m., the American people will surround the U.S. Capitol and demand the arrest of Netanyahu. More information, including about transportation, is at shutitdownforpalestine.org. That's shutitdown, the number four, palestine.org.
Thanks to all who contributed to or are thinking about contributing to WPFW's Relocation Fund and to those who attended the reggae concert or open house. Your generous donations are what make all things WPFW possible. This is Miyuki. Special thanks to Joyce and James Kilgore, who made the commemorative Ellington 125 t-shirt and tote possible. They are still available as thank you gifts. Details at WPFWFM.org. Thanks to Mrs. Gloria Turner for everything you do. And thanks to you for partnering with WPFW to help build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Greetings. WPFW is pleased to announce the relaunch of our major donor program, now known as the Jazz and Justice Circle. If you gave $1,000 last year or so far this year, you are automatically enrolled in this cherished group of listener members, and we thank you. Benefits of your membership are at WPFWFM.org under the Support Us tab at the top of the homepage is the Jazz and Justice Circle. Interested in joining this select group? Please consider a donation of $1,000 or more online at WPFWFM.org. Your donation helps WPFW build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Welcome to The Collision.
The Collision, where sports and politics smash. Thursdays at 10 a.m. and on iTunes and Google Play. WPFW, Washington, D.C.
Hello, WPFW. Summertime is here. Words Beats in Life and Arts for Everybody have the event for your family and friends this season. DMV Made Festival is happening Saturday, July 27th on the National Mall, a one-day celebration of the D.C., Maryland, Virginia region, promoting the intersections of arts and culture, plus health and wellness. Featuring musical acts, Chuck Brown Band, Sweet Honey and the Rock, Substantial, Belladonna, DuPont Brass, and just added, The Blackbirds, celebrating 50 years of their classic, Rock Creek Park, plus four more music and dance stages, Family Fun Zone, Poetry and Storytelling Pavilion, live art installations, hands-on workshops.